Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 223 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I am super excited to bring you my interview with Philip Dorman. He is Director of Product Development at Treaty Oak Distilling. I really wanted to sit down with him because there's a lot going on at Treaty Oak Distilling, and I knew he would have a lot of answers. Also, I wanted to learn more about whiskey, the history of whiskey, what makes a bourbon, what makes a rye. He goes into depth in the middle of this interview. He goes really into depth about all those different things. And I think you'll walk away from this with a better understanding of the differences, what makes up specific things, even what makes up Canadian whiskey, but also have a better appreciation for whiskey as well as what Treaty Oak does. I can go on and on and on in this introduction because there's a lot in this interview. Look in the notes below, look in the companion blog for links, but we go over a lot of different things. And also check their social media for their hours, because at different times they could be open Friday through Sunday, they could have expanded hours, or they can contract those hours back down to that. It all depends on how things are going with COVID. But we talk about all their different products. However, the main thing that he wants people to know is they should visit the ranch, which is the 26-acre property. They have Alice's Restaurant, which is barbecue and live fire, which has draft cocktails there. They have a beer program that's just on property. They have wine on property. You can get hand sanitizer. They've moved into old fashions. They have a thing called the day drinker. They have a gin and tonic. They're having a citrus version of that. The whole ready-to-drink world, I guess, is expanding rapidly, so they're jumping into that. But I think overall, you're going to really enjoy listening to Phil talk about everything that they do, and why they do it, and how he, through his journey, has come to this. It includes music, it includes moonshine. I can't thank him enough for taking the time to share all these different things and to share his story and his point of view. And I know that you are going to really enjoy this. And I'm also excited that they're a sponsor of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints YouTube show and podcast. It's great to be tied to great people. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. Check it out. Links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, interesting news about barbecue joints, collections of different things. I'm doing lots of different write-ups. I'm adding a lot of fresh content that I hope you guys enjoy. I'm on all the social media at kevinsbbqjoints. If you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out. We've got over 200 interviews and also barbecue joint tours, sausage making facilities, lots of cool stuff. But in the end, stay safe, enjoy this, and check out treatyoakdistilling.com. What winery are you at?
Yeah, it's my friends at Pernow Cellars are in Stonewall, Texas.
Okay, how far away is that from Treaty Oak?
It's about 45 minutes. Out here, if you go west, it becomes wine country. It's insane. 290, the highway runs through here, and it's just...
Oh, that's so cool.
Wineries on both sides. It's become just a really strong industry out here.
Okay, so that's where it is. I've always wondered where that wine region is. I've lived in Texas for a year, but I went to Dripping Springs, but never went west of it.
Dripping Springs is kind of the gateway to the hill country. And so once you start going further west, the hills get a little bigger and it just becomes mostly agriculture. And it was originally all peaches. This was a peach area. Seems like wine and grapes are a little more profitable and also a little easier to manage.
Do people still farm for peaches out there?
For sure. There's, I'm on the way here, I maybe passed 8 or 9 different orchards.
Okay, but, so just lower.
It's still prevalent, but it's definitely becoming more wine country than peach country.
Gotcha. Texas has changed a lot, like even in the last 5 years.
Oh, for sure. Every year, it's like, it's hard to keep track. I always like have a number in my head of how many distillers there are in the state, but every time I say it, I feel like it's outdated.
Same with even Los Angeles. There's a bunch. It's not as prevalent because of zoning and things, but let's go back. I want to get your history a little bit. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. Just came off of a good long vacation. Was up camping in Montana in that area.
Oh, nice.
So feeling fresh. Yeah, just because of COVID, we're not distilling at the moment, so it was a rare opportunity to take a little bit of a longer vacation. Once the stills are running, I can't take a very long time off from them.
This must have been your first long vacation in a long time.
Yep, I haven't taken 3 weeks off, besides having like Christmas break. I haven't taken 3 weeks off in one period of time since I started almost 7 years ago. So.
Oh, wow. Where in Montana were you?
Man, I was everywhere. I went to Wyoming, Montana, both the Dakotas, Idaho.
Oh, that's awesome.
New Mexico, Utah, all over.
That is killer. How was like do what was it weird traveling these places or people like do you see a difference like are people wearing masks, people not wearing masks, like the attitude is I was just curious with the whole COVID thing.
Oh, no, that's a good point. It was fascinating to see like what areas really were putting efforts into controlling the spread and other areas that were just didn't care one bit. It was like New Mexico, you saw no masks. Colorado, like Boulder, Boulder was so intense. Everybody had masks
I
on.
could see that.
And then once you got up, I mean, Montana and the Dakotas have very few cases. So
That's true.
got up there and it was like I was at a bar and there was a band playing and people were dancing and hugging and sharing drinks. It was like, whoa, this was what life used to be
Yeah, the
like.
old days, like yeah, do the early
Yep.
2020.
It's become the old days.
It is really weird. It's weird to think like that how much has changed in the last 5 or 6 months. And my nephew's going to the university. I think it's the University of Montana. Oh no, Montana State University in Bozeman. Did you go through Bozeman at all?
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh, I did.
Yeah, is it a cool place? I was just curious.
It is. Yeah, I have a friend that lives just like 15 miles north of Yellowstone.
Okay.
So I stayed with her, and then Bozeman's not far from there.
Okay. Oh, cool. So he'll be close to Yellowstone.
Yeah, he's literally 15 miles north of there. So
That
like
is, oh, that's
you're
awesome.
looking at the range of the Yellowstone. It was
Wow.
spectacular.
That's really cool. Well, how long have you lived in Texas? Did you grow up in Texas?
Yep, I'm born and raised Dripping Springs.
Oh, wow. So Dripping Springs, too.
Yep, it's funny. I grew up 12 minutes west of Treaty Oak on Fitchew, the same road that Treaty Oak is on, and now I live 10 minutes east of Treaty Oak on Fitchew. So I've spent most of my life on the road.
Wow. Did you live anywhere else?
I did school in North Carolina,
Oh.
and then I lived in Nashville for a good long while, doing music work, and then eventually moseyed on home and haven't even thought about moving out since.
That's really cool. Like the Nashville's on my list of places to potentially move. I want to move to Texas, move back to Texas, but is like that's you've in North Carolina. I used to go to North Carolina like 3 times a year for business. It's definitely interesting parts of the country. They're really cool parts of the country.
Yeah, I love both those states. I got a lot of really good friends, but Texas is home.
Texas is special. It's very special.
Yep.
Did you go to school for anything that you're doing right now?
Not at all.
How'd you get into it?
I went to school for soccer at the end of the day.
Oh,
I
that's
played
cool.
collegiate ball for a few years, but that's not a sustainable thing.
It's not it.
And got into the music business. My dad's a professional musician. I grew up around it all my life. I started doing I finished my degree was in music business, so managed some bands, did a lot of live broadcasted radio shows, and just through all that you just get so associated with local brands of beer.
For sure.
And I just kind of found myself that was one of my favorite parts about being on the road was just trying local brew. And somehow along the way I got back to Texas, and I knew a guy in North Carolina that was making moonshine up in the hills, and just west or just east of Asheville.
Okay.
So went up there and lived with him for a winter and learned how to make moonshine in a shed, and was like, man,
What was that like?
I like not very safe,
You're the
but
fan.
I mean the same concepts apply. It's the same thing. I just work on better equipment that's safer and can make better quality products and a lot more products. I went back to Texas after that, was moonshining at home, and then right around the same period, Treaty Oak was moving from North Austin to Dripping Springs,
Okay.
where they're at now. And I linked up with Daniel Barnes, the owner,
Yeah.
and got a job building fences, just getting the property up and running, and eventually started distilling. And then now I run the whole development program. So I build all the products, and also I have my pulse, or I have the pulse on the bourbon and the gins that we're producing and how we're producing them.
Already, it's a cool story and it's an interesting story. It's like an interesting path that you probably would have never thought that you'd be where you are right now, but whoever thinks they are, but
Oh,
still.
exactly. And I think that's one of the unique things about Treaty Oak just as a whole is we all come from a place where none of us had a background in distilling. We all just kind of found a passion for it and set our minds to doing it. And so we come with a very different approach. Like, we don't have preconceived notions or traditions that we brought into the distillery. We came with just ambition and curiosity. And with that, we really developed the unique products that we make, just because we don't have those preconceived notions of how to make bourbon and how to make gin.
So you're actually paving your own way and creating your own style.
Exactly. And with that definitely comes a lot of failures and trial and errors that don't work out well. We won't go into any details.
No, that makes sense, though. It does make sense.
At this point, I've been with them for almost 7 years, and a lot of the guys in the distillery have been there for as long, if not longer, than me. So we've developed our understanding of it at this point.
What was it like 7 years ago? What products did you guys have?
So rum was our flagship.
Okay,
white
I know
rum.
That.
Yeah. So a lot of people still in Texas know us as a rum distillery. Back then, we were doing still the white rum. We aged that rum. We had a vodka called Starlight Vodka. We had a Graham's Texas Tea. It was a tea vodka. Huh. We had our Waterloo gin, and we had just started distilling whiskey and putting it back. We didn't have any bourbon that we made ourselves. We did have Red Handed bourbon, which was a source bourbon, just because we knew we eventually wanted to become a bourbon distiller, and that'd be our primary mark. We just weren't there. We didn't have the proper equipment, or we didn't have the financial backing to really make bourbon properly. So we took the route of, it's called Red Handed bourbon, because
that's why.
We sourced it. We like Red Handed. We stole it. We got caught red handed, but like, we're sourcing from really unique places. We're getting bourbon that we really love, and we're being more tastemakers than distillers, which is a refreshing pivot because we're so used to being the people producing this stuff. We still have that line.
You still have that line. Now, is that something that you guys went and you kind of shaped the profile there? Like, is that something, like, how does that work, that when you work with, when you not outsource, but when you use a different distillery?
It's more like we look for really special juice that's unique and something that we love as a distillery, and we want to showcase. We are constantly getting different samples in from distilleries all over the country and in Canada as well. Like our red-handed rye, we brought it in as a 10-year-old rye, and from an old defunct distillery, the Shinley Distillery.
Oh.
So we found it. It was really unique because it was kind of counter to the current trend of really high rye. So like a lot of ryes you see on the market these days are like 95% rye, and there's just this big push for really bold, spicy rye. And we found this 53% rye, so still considered rye, but a lot closer to a bourbon, but aged in a used barrel, so it's straw colored. It's very light, but it's just really unique. It's got so many green apple, tart, fresh,
without a doubt,
bell peppered qualities, and we love it. And we as soon as we tasted it, we were like, we want to bring this in, and this fits under our profile great because it's unique.
Are they still making it for you, or are you guys making it?
No. So it's not contract distillation. It's simply we'll bring in samples. Like, somebody's selling it, and we taste it, we love it, and then we bring it in as barrels.
As barrels, gotcha.
And then we do single barrel picks, but we also have our standard red-handed rye, which is this juice.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's gone, it's gone. The distillery's defunct.
It's not unlike how people do in the wine business too, how people bring in juice from different growers.
Exactly.
And different. Okay. So once this rye is gone, it's gone.
Yep. There's no more. And then, but there's excitement in that too, because
for sure
we'll have another rye that we're really stoked about that has totally different qualities to it, but still something that we have pride in selling, and saying,
sure,
hey, we found this really good stuff. I hope you love it as much as we do.
That's cool. So can you explain what a rye is to people? And can you explain what the difference is bourbon-wise, like bourbon to scotch? Just kind of like not a four-hour seminar, but kind of explain for people.
Right. Because
there's a lot of people listening that are like, I like bourbon, but I don't know why I like it, and I like scotch, but I... And like, what's a rye? And my friend likes rye, but I don't know why he likes rye.
You have to back up to just, what is whiskey?
Exactly, true,
so,
true, true.
Right. So whiskey is simply a fermented grain that has been distilled. The most common four grains are corn, wheat, rye, and barley.
Okay.
The early whiskeys were made in Ireland and Scotland, and those were all made solely with barley. Mm-hmm. So Irish, they use some malted, they use some unmalted barley with their malted barley. But like, say if you see a single malt whiskey, that is typically coming from Scotland and single malt, so it means it only has malted barley in it.
Okay.
So that's the only grain used. Where you move over here to North America, where corn grows and wheat grows really well, the Scottish settlers and the Irish settlers that were in the Northeast and eventually moved to Kentucky, they had all this grain that was, they already sold, they had already made their cornmeal, and they had all this leftover grain that they couldn't use and they didn't want it to spoil. So that's what became the whiskey.
Okay.
Was they took those grains, they milled it into a powder, into more of a flour, they fermented it with water and yeast, and then that eventually became beer, and then they put that in the still, and then that's how they made whiskey. So whiskey is really just whatever grains are around historically.
Okay, this is awesome. No, thank you so much, Phil. Whiskey's with whatever's plentiful around them.
Historically. Like one of the early spirits of the United States was rye, because rye is such a hardy grain. All in Pennsylvania and Maryland, before bourbon, rye was the spirit of the United States.
Oh, interesting.
And obviously, that was at a very different time.
Yeah.
At this point, we've defined spirits a lot more. So at this point, bourbon has quite a few requirements. It has to be at least 51% corn.
Okay.
It has to be aged in new charred white oak barrels. Okay. So it has to be a brand new barrel that has never touched any other spirit or any other products. That's what gives bourbon so much color, and you get a lot of the char, like oak tannins.
Yeah.
That's
okay,
because it's required.
Okay.
It's required to be a new barrel, and like that's why there's so much vanilla and caramels in bourbon opposed to say like your single malts,
mm-hmm,
and your Irish whiskeys.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Just because it's just that brand new fresh virgin oak, and actually because we have to go through so many barrels, we sell all of our barrels, not we Treaty Oak, but we as the United States sells almost all of our barrels to Scotland and Ireland.
That's what I thought.
Their product, because they don't have a requirement for it to be a new oak. They actually prefer, just from their profile, to be a used barrel. So those barrels have this great life cycle, and a lot of times they eventually get down to the Caribbean to make rum.
Interesting.
So besides that, it has to be made in the United States. Bourbon cannot be made outside of the U.S. It's got an appellation of origin. It's got to be distilled lower than 80% alcohol. So the higher that you distill your proof, so proof is just 40% alcohol is 80 proof. Just double the percent alcohol and you get the proof.
Oh, gotcha.
But the higher you get up, it gets closer to vodka, which is neither good nor bad, but the more ethanol there is and the higher proof it is, the more you lose the base integral qualities of your raw materials. So by distilling it less than 80% alcohol, that means that you're holding the integrity of the grains. It's going to taste like the corn, the wheat, right, the barley. So most bourbons out there, I'd say 90% of bourbons on the market are corn, obviously 51% or more,
mm-hmm,
and then rye, and then malted barley. Our bourbon is a little bit different. We choose a wheat instead of a rye.
Okay, why is that?
I think wheat does better in the Texas heat. It ages better with just our really high temperatures.
For sure.
Because sometimes those really spicy qualities of rye can create a lot of just like intensity and heat for the mouthfeel and just on the palate, whenever you're drinking it and while it's aging in Texas. So we also love the qualities wheat gives beyond that. Wheat is known for being a lot of stone fruit notes, a lot of like dark cherry qualities, and it's got a silkier mouthfeel, mm-hmm. which is part of that heat, combating that heat. And that's just, those are the bourbons that we love. Think of Maker's Mark, Weller's, Pappy. Those are all historically famous wheated bourbons.
And they're historically famous, like very popular in Texas too. Everyone that when I lived there, a lot of people were drinking Makers or Weller's, and I had never even heard of Weller's like growing up in Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah, just I guess it just depends on where you live. When you were first drinking, were you drinking bourbons
or beer? I drank more beer. Same. And wine.
Yeah.
I didn't get into spirits till a little bit later. I remember like being in college and we would have whiskey and dart nights. That was like right when I was starting to dive into the whiskey world. At that point, I was excited about Canadian Club. So it's my palate has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, I think so. Isn't it really sweet? From what I remember, didn't people mix it with seven, like CC and seven? Or would people put seven up, like mix it with seven up or something weird like that? Or
yeah, Seagram's and seven. Oh, Seagram's, I mean, there's, yeah. Canadian whiskey gets a lot of hate just because they have some pretty ambiguous legislation around what is and isn't whiskey. But
that's interesting.
Canadian whiskey is absolutely delicious, and there's some folks doing it really well, and people don't know very much about it. And
no.
I love chatting about it because people think of Crown Royal and Canadian Club and Seagram's, which are all blended whiskey. So they don't have, like, a lot of times they blend grain neutral spirits, so basically vodka in there.
Oh,
and a lot of times they'll add caramel coloring and different like vanillins and apple flavors. And they don't have to disclose that. But it's unfortunate that that is what Canadian whiskey is known for, because there's some distilleries that do really good stuff, and they do it differently than us historically, because they do, instead of making a mash bill, so mm-hmm. like you always hear people talking about, oh, what's the mash bill of that bourbon? And so that's like our ghost hill bourbon is 57% corn, 32% wheat, 11% malted barley. So instead of putting all those grains, cooking and fermenting them and distilling them together, they actually will distill 100% corn, 100% wheat, 100% rye, 100% malted barley, put them in barrels, blend them, and then after it's all been aged and finished, then they blend it together.
Wow.
So they take a very different approach to American bourbon with the exact same grains. And there's some really good juice out there.
Almost so. Scientific. And it's interesting you call it juice. It's like I didn't know like that. It sounds like an inside term, but I'm sure a lot of people that know it that or that make their own call it juice. But and it makes sense that it's called juice. Is that what they call for grapes? Do they call it like the juice too, or they call it something else?
Yeah, they call it juice. But it just makes it acceptable to drink for breakfast, right? If you call it juice.
When you were at 7 years ago, when you guys were you starting to get really excited about what you're doing, and were people starting to gravitate towards the red-handed? And like, is that something like, was there a point where you realized, okay, this is something that with Barnes, like that you guys all realized, okay, this is something good?
Work. Yeah. So, we were planning on dropping the whole brand because obviously we're more excited about what we make from scratch and it's more of our expression, and we were planning on dropping it. And then it was just doing so well in the market and it was just getting a lot of steam, so we decided that we might as well keep it and really like push the same concept that I've already kind of outlined.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like we want to be producers as well as tastemakers, so in that light we decided to continue it on.
So let's talk about Ghost Hill though. You broke down a little bit of how you make it, but is that one's 100% you guys, right?
Yep, that is all Texas grain. We bring it in, we work closely with the farmers. We've worked to find the exact varieties of grain, of like corn and wheat that we prefer. Gets distilled, aged, bottled, everything but sold. So it's sold all over the country. Yeah, everything is done in house.
You bottle everything in house?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. But Ghost Hill's your baby.
Ghost Hill is what is near and dear to our heart, and that's but we're always pushing and trying to make a little bit better.
I love Ghost Hill. I think that's my favorite, but now that you've talked so much about the rye, I really want to, like, think about the rye while I'm drinking it, as opposed to not, like, just enjoy it, but also think about what you've discussed here about the rye that makes it so special. But the Ghost Hill is phenomenal. Like, so, can we talk about the three different ones, and then you guys also, and then the rum, was the rum gone and then it came back, or have you always had the rum?
We went through a rebrand, I guess, maybe 2 years ago. It's hard to keep track of time.
That's okay.
Time, but yeah. Maybe 2 years ago, we brought in some investors because we wanted to move to be a national brand. Mm-hmm. And with that came a total makeover. We rebranded everything, new packaging. And in that, it was the hardest decision we had to make, but we chose to pull the rum from our category, okay, or from our portfolio, both the aged and the white, just because whenever you're a national brand, you have people out there singing the gospel of it. It's really hard to have a concise message to the consumer.
That makes sense.
When you have so many products. So we stepped back and was like, all right, well, what do we feel like we do the best? What do we feel like we have the most ingenuity and creativity with? And we decided those two were our gins and our bourbons and our whiskeys. So in that light, we chose to pull it out. But we are actually releasing, or it's becoming part of the portfolio again shortly, just the aged rum. We got some new packaging for it, and we've released a few, like, single barrels, but it's going to be a mainstay that's beyond just the ranch, probably in the next 5-6 months would be my guess.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because that's where I had seen it pop up, like, in your social media and everything, and I'd seen that rum was back, and I thought, well, that, I didn't really understand that, and that does make sense. But you have to bring it out properly, because people know you how they know you now.
Exactly. It brings me to a point, like, the ranch is a really great, I call it our petri dish, because there's so many products that we can have on site that we're tasting people on, and like our bottle shop, and we can just get so much great feedback from the consumer.
Like, perfect.
And to understand kind of preferences and what people are really excited about, and we definitely expand on that and just finding trends. And so, like, the rum is something that people are constantly like, oh, we love the rum, like, bring it back. And there are different like heirloom grains that we've been working with, and we'll do only on site ranch release. And when things grow legs, then we can consider taking it off property and putting it into distribution. But it's just a great space. It's a great safe space where people are excited to come to the property and actually taste stuff they can't get anywhere else, but at the same time it gives us really good feedback. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about the property. I talked to Scott about it, and he's overjoyed. He loves it. It's like heaven on earth to Scott. But to discuss, like, for people that maybe might not listen to that interview, what's it like visiting, and when will you guys start distilling again too? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I expect we've been talking about getting going again in August.
August. Okay.
I guess it's been about March, April, May. It's been,
wow,
over 3 months off.
Good amount of time.
I mean, yep, which is tough because we're not making bourbon for right now. We're making bourbon from 4 years from now.
For sure.
So we have to account for the fact that those barrels we're not producing might mean a shortage down the road. So right now, I believe we're open 6 days a week.
Okay.
And then that's the restaurant and cocktails. A lot of, like, we don't do tours right now.
Yeah, I was going to say tours are off. Right?
And our, like, shaken and stirred, like, high-end cocktails in one of our bars. We're not doing that just because it's a closed space that's indoors. So we have the great fortune of buying – we have 26 acres right now.
Yeah.
So we're able to keep everybody outside and still have a whole lot of people and do it safely. So we're very fortunate – opposed to a lot of distilleries that are struggling through this because they only have, like, one indoor space. Mm-hmm. So we are able to handle a lot of people and still serve all that barbecue that Scott's been making.
Yeah, that is perfect. So let's say, like, COVID's over, or it's during a kind of a normal time of life. When you come in, you can get food, but you could also, you had what? Did you have two bars at one point?
Yeah, so we have the restaurant,
mm-hmm,
which is all of our barbecue and all of our food. But we have cocktails there as well, all draft cocktails.
Okay.
So we get so many people on a if it's a peak beautiful weekend on a Saturday, we might have 1,200 people there at one one moment in time. So
that's amazing.
We can't shake and stir that many cocktails. So in the restaurant, we have a draft cocktail system. So it's all still fresh juice and like really nice, high quality cocktails. But we can get them out quickly.
Pump them out quicker.
And then we have what we call our Rick House, which is we store some barrels in there, but it's mostly a bar. It's like a open air barn that we serve all of our cocktails in. So those same draft cocktails. We also have our cocktail lab, or I don't remember what we're calling it right now. We've changed the name of it so many times, but it's like our high-end shaken and stirred cocktails. Gotcha. You can fit maybe 50 people in there, and in there we put a lot of emphasis on techniques of making really nice cocktails that are unique and are conversation pieces. And there you sit down at the bar, you talk to the bartender, there's a lot more education.
That's great.
In that room than the other spots where, like, yeah, if you want to just go get a drink and go hang out with friends, you can do that. Or if you really want to dive in deep on what these spirits are and how you make these cocktails, you belly up to the bar and then.
So once life gets back closer to normal, that's when that'll be open.
Yep. But, I mean, we have a beer program. Our brewer, Jason Stein, makes some really great beer. So that's for the property only. We have a wine program. Yeah, we have a wine program. So we aren't making any wine, but we work closely with wineries right around this area that I'm in right now, the Stonewall area.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yep. So we bring in our own blends and sell them, just because we get so many people, we want to cater to everybody. Not everybody wants to drink spirits, and we want to have an environment where everybody's welcome and can get what they want.
That's amazing. And I was telling Scott, and I was just kind of joking, I'm like, you guys need to eventually have...
I know, it's a dangerous combination of all those things.
So you need to have eventually lodging on site, because in that way, but I guess there's places close by that you could stay.
Yeah, there's so many Airbnbs and hotels. We've considered it. There might be cottages in our future. That's just a whole nother ball game. And right now we're still working on making the best bourbon.
Yeah. No, that's a different animal unto itself. That's a whole hospitality animal that needs to be done right. And you guys, seems like everything you guys do, you want to do right.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't rush into anything.
Wow. And that's like how has it been during this COVID time? Has it felt weird to not, were you the one giving tours too?
No, I work Monday through Friday.
Oh, gotcha.
Every once in a while, if we have a specialty event, I'll come in and do a tour. But for the most part, I'm Monday through Friday. It's been bizarre. I mean, we're all happiest when the stills are running. That's all what we want to be doing. So, anytime the stills aren't running, there's a certain blanket around the distillery. We had to shift entirely to sanitizer.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of saw that trend coming. So fortunately, we had a lot of grain neutral spirit in inventory. And so it was the Wild West. Every day there was different statements being released by the CDC or the FDA or TTB, all these government agencies. So it's funny because it's like we're sitting here and like, we get this statement and we're like, all right, well, we need to get this denaturing agent. So like I'm running over here calling all these people, and all these other distilleries are doing the same thing. It kind of felt like a rat race there for a while.
I can imagine.
Because there were so many shortages
mm-hmm.
of a lot of these items. So just trying to be the first to get to these items and being really proactive and being forward thinking. It was a stressful time. It really was, like, even down to like the packaging, like bottles. It was really hard to get bottles at that time.
Well, that makes sense.
So it was just this crazy time of like having to be quick on your feet and doing everything you can just to get the sanitizer out. And it worked. I mean, it was a perfect compromise, because like thinking about what distilleries can do for the community.
For sure.
This was definitely the best thing. I mean, we make booze for a living. We make something that's sanitary. So it's the best thing we could be providing. But at the same time, we donate a lot of product, but at the same time, we're able to sell this sanitizer that allows us to stay afloat, allows us to be still employed and still be there and staying afloat. So it was really a great compromise and a great place to be for distillers to make sanitizer.
And it just shows too, like how tenacious people can be and how like the ingenuity of like Americans and people in general. And these, like the fact that people switched over to doing like sanitizer or like Ford switched over to making ventilators. It's just during this time, it's such a weird, we're going to look back on this and just marvel at like how terrible it was, but also how amazing it was.
But it's funny. I mean, we sold product. I mean, you can find our stuff in Whole Foods. NASA had purchased some sanitizer.
Did they?
So there's a lot. Yep. NASA's got some of our, I need to get that email address because we are always debating random questions. It'd be good to have NASA on our email list of questions.
That would be awesome.
We're arguing about boiling water in space. So it'd be good to get NASA's feedback on our debate.
That would be really, really fun. It'd be cool to share that information too, like that you, and it would be cool to have like that Trinity Oak connection to NASA. People be like, how do they have this interesting connection to NASA and they have someone's ear? Because I don't know the answer to that. What do you think? Yep. What's your theory?
There's no oxygen, so I think you would really struggle to boil water. Mm-hmm.
But they could also, they're able to solder, right? Can they weld in space?
Ooh, we didn't bring that up.
They have to be able to do that.
I don't know. Maybe in like the controlled space station that they like pump oxygen.
Yeah,
in
that
there.
They create you don't want to mess with a whole bunch of stuff in space. Well, what like to kind of summarize this? Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you'd want people to know about Treaty Oak? Or, and I know it's available, and I'll be showing pictures of product and stuff. And I have product. I have photos of everything, but. Is there something specific about Treaty Oak that people should know?
Well, we're releasing a few products right now that so we finalized our old fashioned recipe and we batched it and got it into bottles this week. We're selling it for the first time at the property today. Yeah, today.
Oh, cool.
And so that's gonna be a big push for us. And you can buy it online as well.
Okay.
Here shortly. We're about to release a day drinker. So just following that trend of beer moving to a more sessionable product, something that you can drink numerous ones opposed to just something really strong and either really hoppy or really malty. Yeah. We're releasing what we call our day drinker. So it's a 40% alcohol. It's our same bourbon, but it's aged a little bit younger. So it's got a lot of those bright, fresh notes to it. But it, being a lower proof, it's something that you can drink out at a picnic or on the river, opposed to our other product that is a higher proof and it might be just a little too hot to really enjoy and you want to kind of pace yourself. It's something that's a little more sessionable.
Oh, that's
so
that's cool.
That's going to be released probably sometime this summer into the fall. On the gin front, we are releasing some gin and tonics. So kind of hopping on the RTD, the ready-to-drink world is just absolutely exploding.
Okay.
So like all the hard seltzer stuff. And we wanted to get into that market, but at the same time still keep it very much Treaty Oak and ourselves. And so doing gin and tonics was a great way. So it has our Waterloo number 9 gin in it, but it's 5% alcohol, 100 calories. So low on the calorie front, but, still has all those qualities of the gin and tonic that you expect, but something that you can pound one after the other and not worry about, getting off the boat or driving home.
So, oh, that's cool too. Wow. That's awesome.
That's going to be, it's a traditional gin and tonic, and then we have a citrus one as well.
So smart. So smart. That's awesome. Anything else new coming up?
We got a Navy Strength gin coming out that's on the other side of it. Navy Strength is a really high ABV gin that typically shares qualities of like So you'll have like you'll Regagen and you'll have your Navy strength, and it'll share qualities of that of your flagship, but it'll be much higher proof, which a lot of people like for cocktails, because essentially it just means it has less water in it.
Gotcha.
So it has more flavor, it's stronger, which works great in cocktails.
Wow. So is that something like summer, fall too?
I think we're still mapping out exactly when our release date is going to be, but somewhere in that range. I don't want to disappoint you, give you anything that doesn't end up being true.
Well, so they could at least people can just pay attention.
Somewhere in the summer, fall.
Gotcha. So if they pay attention to social media, yep, they can check up and see when this.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. We'll shout loud and do jumping jacks and tell everybody what's going on. So.
Do you guys have a newsletter too?
Yeah, it's called Pursuit of the Curious. Mm-hmm. I bet if you go online, you can figure out. If you go to our website, treeoakdistilling.com, I'm sure you could very quickly navigate how to how to subscribe to it.
Exactly.
But I don't know. I'm a bit slow when it comes to technology.
You don't have to be. That's someone else's job. But it's yeah. So then yeah, there's the social media is probably the best place. Like follow you on Instagram, follow you on Facebook. I think Twitter. I think you guys have Twitter, but I don't know if it's. I think those are the two main ones are Facebook and Instagram right now that have that, because it's more visual.
We're always releasing single barrels and unique stuff on the whiskey front. Socials help with that, but I mean, being at the property is really the best.
That's
way
the goal.
To understand who Treaty Oak is and what we're doing, and just the forward thinking and our willingness to step outside of the box and tradition, and just ask those questions and make the products that do ask those questions.
Exactly. Well, that's what I try to push, is for people to visit you guys on property, because it's a lot more special than, like, it's nice if you live out of state to be able to purchase your bourbons and whiskeys, to be able to purchase them at like their local BevMo or Total Wine or whatever. But going on property, that's my goal, is to, the next time I'm in Texas, I plan to spend a couple of days there, because it looks fantastic. This looks like a great experience.
Yeah. Well, we're also in California. Florida is a great market for us. We're in Illinois, Tennessee. So there's quite a few places that we're starting to have a pretty good following, and a place where you can find our spirits without ordering them online.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But they can order online, too, off your website. And there's also a bunch of clothing and swag and cool stuff. To end it, what about the maple syrup? Is that your? Oh, was that yours? Your idea? Or whose idea was the maple?
I think that was Daniel, the owner. He, I don't know how that dude... That dude doesn't sleep at all. That dude's brain is moving all the time. And it's a full-time job just making all the ideas that he has come to fruition. And he's extremely... well-read and educated and has tons of great ideas. So I'm pretty sure the maple syrup was one of his. We barely, that stuff's good. That's
so good.
I have a bottle that I just drink it. I mean, I just drink maple syrup in general for dessert. Just drink it like pop.
I put it on ice cream and it was so good. So good.
Yeah. I love that stuff. But olive oil, we do a bunch of stuff.
That's rad. Well, thank you, Phil, for taking the time and especially for sharing. I think that I gained a lot of knowledge. I know a lot of people will gain a lot of knowledge from this.
Education is the other side of it. I mean, I learned from so many people and it took me a lot of people to get to where I am right now. So it's part of it is the more you learn, the more you want to teach. So.
For sure. Well, thank you for taking the time and thank you for doing what you're doing and stay safe. And I can't wait to visit once this fog lifts a little bit more.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, it was so nice to meet you and so chat nice with to meet you. You. Hopefully I'll get to meet you in person one day.
You will, for sure. Most definitely. Oh, without a doubt. But hopefully it'll be sooner than later.